Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello everyone out there in Blog Talk Radio land. This is your host and friend, the Sand Tiger DJ Southeast Vince, coming from you, coming at you from a place called Durham, North Carolina. And this is Black by Color only on CNM Radio. On this show, I will discuss current events and issues that affect the black race and take on the apostles of blackness. Hopefully you'll get something from this show. And if you have a question or a comment, make sure you season it well with respect, or I'll push the kick button and you will suffer the curse of the fruit bat. So don't come here being a fruit bat, as this is a fruit bat free program. You are listening to Black by Color only. Well, hello, everybody out there in my listening audience, whoever you may be, whether you're live or listening in the archives. Welcome to the show. Happy Saturday after Thanksgiving to you. By now, all your systems by now. But if you would like to call in as a guest, the call-in number is 646-478-5284. That's 646-478-5284. And you can call in and talk about anything related to the subject matter. But I will give you a word of warning. Please pay attention to the aforementioned curse of the fruit bat. If you come in here and you want to indulge in character assassinations, ad hominem attacks, excessive profanity. What's the other thing? gaslighting, things of that sort. It will prompt me to push the kick button and you will be exited off this show. Okay. In other words, you'll suffer the curse of the fruit bat. You know, please be respectful when you come on this program. Because, you know, when you're disrespectful, it tends to disrupt the program and it takes me offline of what my real purpose is. So if you're going to come in here, like I said, you don't have to agree with me. If you're going to come in here and you're going to indulge in this program, you know, do it with respect. That's all I ask. Okay. So, and when you come to the show, I really do seriously hope you get something out of this program. I'm not just up here just to talk, just to be talking or anything like that. I will admit this is a good way for me to vent, but really I'm not just up here to talk just so you can hear my voice. Okay. Hey there, bring it, boy. But I really want people to get something from this program. Because it's really no use of me being up here and talking about these subjects and you're not really getting any meat from the program. But anyway, I have I come to this program. First of all, before I say anything, I hope you all had a very happy Thanksgiving out there. Hope you all enjoyed yourselves, enjoyed time with friends and family. I hung out here in Durham. I'm real close with the family here in Durham, and we went over to their house and we had a good old time and everything. And while I was there, I asked the lady of the house, I asked her how big her house was. She said it was 2,700 square feet. Because my wife and I, we really want a house. I don't think we have the finances to get a house right now, but we really do want a house, you know. And I, for one, want a house. You know, of course, the obvious reasons, you want more room, but I really want a house because I want to set up a studio or whatever and have a better place to do my radio program. Because right now I'm in a two-bedroom apartment that's 750 square feet. So if you imagine how small 750 square feet is, you know, you can understand why I want to get in a bigger place. But, you know, right now is not a good time to get a house, you know, because of our housing market and economy and stuff like that. But it doesn't take me away from wanting a house, you know. But what I wanted to say, this week, I'm doing this show with kind of a heavy heart. And you all know about the crime situation around this country. And crime goes on all the time. Let me just assure you of that. Well, not assure you, but, you know, we all know that, you know, crime is an ongoing thing. And, you know, they're going to be criminals no matter how tight a law you enact in your jurisdiction or your cities or whatever. You know, you're always going to have to deal with a criminal element. But my thing is this, is if you take it on head on, you know, you can lessen the instances of crime in your city. There's always going to be crime. And my thing is, I believe that a lot of our elected officials are really out of touch, which is why we've seen so many spikes in crime around the country. And they're so focused on civil rights and, you know, black people's encounters with white cops and everything. They're more concerned about that than they are about actual crime. See, criminality is a universal term. Criminality, it has no basis in skin color or anything like that. Whether you black, white, yellow, brown, olive, red, whatever, you can be a criminal. The possibilities are there that you can be a criminal. But what we see in society today is we try to focus on one group of people as if this group of people are just so innocent and whatever, that whenever they have a negative encounter with a law enforcement official, it's automatically deemed racism. And they try to focus in on that more than anything, instead of dealing with the general problem of crime. They want to focus in on the civil rights. This is one of the main reasons why I believe that crime is skyrocketing in our cities, because we get these elected officials. We get up there and we start talking about skin color. Here in North Carolina, there was a lady, she was up for election. Her name was Cherry Beasley. And she was running against another guy who was Ted Budd. Now, a lot of black people in North Carolina, they liked Cherry Beasley simply because she was black and she was liberal. Ted Budd, he's a white conservative. So white conservative is already a buzzword. Oh, he's a racist. oh, he doesn't care about civil rights. Oh, this and that and everything and stuff like that. So they, you know, a lot of black people, they wanted to put their votes behind Cherry Beasley. Unfortunately, Cherry Beasley did not get elected. And I use the term unfortunately very loosely. She did not get elected. But in the cities around this country, here in Durham too, you have your cities are being run by black mayors, and they have black city council, black chief of police, and everything. That's what we have in Durham. And see, here's the thing about Durham: we have a black mayor and a black chief of police, and they are both females. Not only that, they're both liberal females, liberal black females. So 9 times out of 10, if your elected official is black and liberal, they're going to focus more on civil rights than they are on the general problem of crime. Because to them, civil rights is the big thing. You know, we got to do something for our black people and everything. No, you were elected not just to help black people or represent black people. You were there. You were elected to represent all people in your city. There should not be a certain demographic or a certain group of people that you hold high above everybody else. You are there to do a job. Skin color be damned. You are there to do a specific job. A lot of times when these officials, they run for election, you know, you get the apostles of blackness, they come up and they're like, well, what are you going to do for black people? What are you going to do for black people? What are you going to do for black people? Well, question. And they say, you know, what are you going to do for black people? I'll be like, let me ask you this. What are black people going to do for themselves? Because I'm not just here to help out black people. I'm here to help out all people. I'm here to represent all people, not just the black ones. But you black, I don't care if I'm black. This city does not just comprise of black people. It comprises all types of people. So my duty is not just to black people, or my duty is not just to, I got to treat black people different. I'm still going to represent this group of people over here, but the black people, they're the ones I really need to concentrate on. No. What are black people going to do for themselves? What are you going to do to clean up your neighborhoods? Because, see, I don't live in your neighborhood. Now, I might represent your neighborhood, and I can probably come into your neighborhood and, you know, talk about, you know, the conditions in your neighborhood and whatever. But what are you going to do for yourselves? I have a saying. Never depend upon an elected official to do for you what you should be doing for yourself. And see, a lot of times we elect these officials and we act as if, okay, job's off of us. It's up to our elected officials now. No. We're in this thing together. Keep in mind, country is supposed to be run by the people, and our elected officials are supposed to represent the people. Let that sink in. See, a lot of people, they think, oh, if I vote for this person, things are going to be all right. And suck on cashews and Kool-Aid all day. It takes all of us. And we shouldn't be focused on what are you going to do for this specific group of people? It's what I'm going to do for all people. Now, I kind of got off track with saying that because as you all may have listened to, you know, listened to my rhetoric here on Blog Talk Radio, I've often mentioned that the crime in Durham has gone up. Already we have close to 40 murders in Durham this year, which for a city like Durham, North Carolina, that's a very high number. It might be approaching record-breaking numbers, to be honest with you. I need to check the statistics. But a victim was claimed here in Durham. So I knew not really well, but I knew kind of well. 25-year-old man got shot and killed here in Durham. A young man named Tyler Young. Now, I know Tyler because I know his family. I especially knew his grandmother and his aunt. They attend a church that I used to go to here in Durham. And when I attended this church, I used to be a teacher for what they call children's church. And Tyler was one of my students. I could just look at Tyler and tell that when he got older, this boy was going places. Never gave me an ounce of trouble. Not one time. Never had to tell him to sit down, be quiet, or anything like that, like some of his other fellow students. He would talk conservatively. He wouldn't talk much. But he used to come into my Sunday school class dressed to the nines. I mean, this boy was sharp. And I used to call him Mr. President because he reminded me of a little politician. He looked just like a little politician. And I said, oh, my God, you know, and I knew this boy was going some. I knew he was going places. He had a great family. And so after he left Children's Church, and of course I left the church itself for reasons that I'll probably state in another program. After some time, you know, some years have passed. What is this? Bring in Git was up. Oh, bring it. Boy, I guess they're saying it. Okay. But anyway, after, you know, some years have passed and whatever, earlier this year, I came across him on Facebook, and I was like, oh, my goodness, there's Tyler. He was, you know, distinguished young man now, you know, got the, you know, I mean, this dude, I don't know if he had a girlfriend or fiance or whatever, but he was he had the looks that the ladies would love. Now, that's all I'm going to say on that, but, he was 24 years old, and I came across him. I said, oh, hey, Mr. President, what's up, man? You know, and everything. He was like, oh, man, Mr. Brown, how you doing? And he was doing a photography business. And he invited me and my wife to come out to his studio to get our pictures taken. And I told him, I said, well, I'm into photography too, and I'm trying to clean up my craft. And still thinking that, hey, maybe, you know, shoot some business his way, you know, maybe one day shoot some business. This was about 3 or 4 months ago. He was 24 years old. And so, you know, we became friends on Facebook. And so this past Tuesday, one of my friends made a post on her page saying, Tyler, you're going to be missed. And I said, Tyler's going to be missed. And this person is a pretty good friend of mine on Facebook. And I said, is that her son? And whatever. But I saw there was a link. And when I hit the link, it went straight to Tyler Young on Facebook. And I'm sitting there, you got to be kidding me. Don't tell me this young man has passed away. And when I first heard about it, I thought maybe he had caught some disease and he died of the disease and it just took him out like that and whatever. So I looked his name up on Google, Tyler Young, Durham, North Carolina. Found out Tyler Young had been murdered about 11:30 Monday night. Now, from what I heard, it was a home invasion. Someone had broken in and had killed him. And the person that they suspected that had killed him was 51 years old. That's just 3 years younger than I am. Up killing him and whatever. And when I learned of that, it just broke me down. I said, now, here is a young man. Here is a young man, got his life straightened up. Really, he wasn't a problem kid. Went to college, graduated from college. He wasn't a problem kid at all. He wasn't one of those, you know, rough and tumble, you know, yo, what's up? You know, he wasn't one of them kids. And when I heard that he had gotten murdered, I was pretty mad. I kind of voiced out loud, you know, I said, I'm sick of Durham. I said, I'm sick of Durham. I'm just sick of Durham. And someone told me, they said, Vincent, you need to calm down because, you know, this goes on everywhere. And they were right, you know. Now, I didn't know this young man very well, but I knew enough of him for it to have an impact on me. But you know what's going to happen to Tyler Young and people like him? They'll probably have his funeral, and he'll be lost to memory, except for by people in his family, because I'm pretty sure his family's tore up about it. I'm pretty sure of that, because he was a high-quality young man. He was one of those boys when he was growing up, you wish you could take him home and adopt him to be your son. That's the type of person he was. He wasn't a troublemaker at all. But we'll forget about Tyler Young. We'll forget about all the various young people who get their lives cut short from the bullet of a gun. Because Tyler Young was murdered by a black person. Tyler himself is a black person. But he was murdered by a black person. And see, here's the problem I have with this is that when a black person meets an untimely end at the hands of another black person, we tend to forget it. We don't put emphasis on it. You know, you might have some people that have a stop the violence rally or anything like that, but it pales in comparison to when a black person meets an untimely end at the hands of a white person. Both are tragic circumstances, but only one gets the attention. Why? Because it feeds a certain narrative. Even though it's not as big a problem, as black-on-black crime. Now, I know a lot of you all out there, you don't like to hear that term black on black crime because you think it was made up by some white supremacist. You think it was made up by some white supremacist to have black people turn against one another and all that crazy mess. But if you would be honest with yourselves, most black people in this country who are murdered, I heard the statistic as high as 96%. I think it's a little bit higher than that. But 96% at least of black people, when they are murdered at the hands of another black person. This is the big problem, not white cops gunning down black people. But because we tend to mention white cops gunning down black people more often than black people gunning down black people, we think the white cop problem is the biggest problem. At the end of this year, we probably would have, I'm just going to make a ballpark figure, maybe 20 black people will have been killed by the cops this year. But how many black people are murdered in comparison by another black person? See, we will focus on the 20 that got killed by the cop. Got killed by another person of their own race. They won't talk about that. Excuse me. And this death of this young man, excuse me, good gracious, this murder of this young man this week just reminds us, it reminded me of the dire situations we're in and why this tragedies like this are going to continue to happen as long as we ignore it. We don't see black-on-black crime as the bigger issue, which it is. It's a way bigger issue. But the apostles of blackness, they always want to stir up the fires of racism. They always want to play the victim. They always want to play innocent. Oh, we don't do anything. And see, for you to really believe that, we're always the victim. You have to have a certain belief that black people don't do anything. We don't commit crimes. We don't do anything to anybody. We're just here minding our own business. And then here comes a cop swooping down on us when we're driving on the highway and he sees a black kid is against the law, which I think is a bad law, but nevertheless, it's still against the law. And then you all want to report on some black guy that got killed by a police officer because he got pulled over because he had some dark tint on his windows. But you choose to ignore Ray Ray, who killed somebody, murdered somebody because they looked at him funny. Okay, I see you there, New Orleans. I just need to get this out. Just bear with me. Be patient. I got you. And thank you for being here, because it's been a while since you've been here. But, you know, just let me get out what I need to get out. But we choose to ignore Ray Ray when he guns down five people because someone looked at him funny. Or someone may have said hi to your girlfriend and you want to kill them. Oh, we choose to ignore that. But when a cop kills a black kid, oh my goodness. Let's block traffic, people. Let's set fire to businesses. Let's call for dead cops. Let's blame it on the white man, what the white man has done. Let's do that. But our young people are being gunned on the streets by other black people. Now, this man that killed Tyler Young, that murdered Tyler Young this week, he was old enough to be his father. He wasn't but 26 years older than Tyler Young. And here's the sad thing about it. Tyler Young, the day after the elections this year, he just celebrated his 25th birthday. But we want to blame everything on the white man. Everything that goes on, that goes negative within the black population, is because of the white man. The white man got us fighting against each other. The white man got us on drugs. the white man, they put them guns in our hands, and now we're killing each other with the guns. No, 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 no. Don't even go there. Don't even go there. Because we all have free will. We can choose to do right, or we can choose to do wrong. Now, you know it. Drugs are bad. But you still want to blame the white man for why drugs are running rampant in our neighborhoods. We know that shooting someone for no reason at all is bad, but you still want to blame the white man for it. You have a choice, young man, young black man. You have a choice. Now, here's the thing. You have the choice to do right, and you have the choice to do wrong, but you can't choose the consequences of your actions. And then when that happens, you meet the consequence of your actions. Well, we got so many black people in jail because so many black people are committing crimes. They're not just pulling these people off the street saying, hey, you know what? I'm going to get you busted on a random crime. Let me see. Yeah, you were a drug dealer. Let me just throw you in prison. Now, don't get me wrong. There are people in jail who should not be there. Don't get me wrong. But it's not just black people either. But the majority of these people who are in prison, the majority of these black people who are in prison, they are there because they belong there. And once again, going back to that question, well, what are you going to do for the black people? Well, what are black people going to do for themselves to clean up their neighborhoods? Are they going to teach their daughters to respect themselves and stop dressing up to show their jiggle and their shake? Are they going to teach their young men how to respect leadership and authority, how to be gentlemen, how to dress properly? Are they going to teach them to pull their pants up and get those earrings out of their noses and whatever? Clean themselves up, make themselves look presentable. Are fathers going to withhold? Are men going to withhold from any type of sexual activity before they get married? Women too. I ain't just going to put this on the men. Are you going to teach your children not to have all these babies out of wedlock before they get married? See, that's something you need to do at a personal level, at an individual level. Now, you can sit here and talk about the white man all you want. You sit here and pretend that, you know, black people don't do anything to anybody. You can sit here and pretend that all you want to. But unless you deal with the bigger issue, the issues that are plaguing the black race today, they are going to continue because you got people that want to hold on to that victimhood mentality. Because when you hold on to the victimhood mentality, it makes you feel innocent. Like we haven't done anything. And then you got these groups like the Black Hebrew Israelites going out there shouting at people on the street corner, talking about how unfortunate we are because a white man is doing this and a white man is doing that. Without taking responsibility for your own actions. Shamika does not exist to be a sperm donor. Lamont is not to be a sperm donor. Shamika is not there to receive your donations of sperm. And you do not exist to be a sperm donor. The Bible says to treat the woman as the weaker vessel, which means we should be gentlemen to these women and stop looking at them as sex packages. That's the problem. But then we want to blame as a white man. Oh, when we were in slavery, this taught us to be like this, and we're still suffering the trauma from slavery. That's a bunch of crap, and you know it. A big pile of steaming, stinking crap. That's all that is. I'm your puppet master. Here, take this gun and shoot that other black person because he looked at you funny. Shoot that other black person because he said hello to your girlfriend. You have a choice. And some of you all have this attitude that you don't even try to, that you don't even try to reel in. You don't even try to control. You just go with your feelings. And that's why a lot of you all end up either dead or in prison. Having said all that, give me a second here. That's my fruit bat alert. Those of you all who come on the show on the regular, when you hear that alert, that means I'm about to go to the phones, which means I have to give you my little warning. Now, if you're going to come on here to disrupt this program with character assassinations, ad hominem attacks, trolling, gaslighting, things of that sort, I'm going to let you know now that you best hang up right now, okay? Because I'm not here for you to, I don't care if you agree with me or disagree with me. We're all going to disagree or whatever. And you might disagree vehemently with me, but it still does not mean that you should not show me any respect. Okay. So if you want to indulge in excessive profanity, and when I say excessive profanity, I mean, it seems like every time you talk, you know, a cuss word got to come out your mouth. I let some of them slide by. I really don't want any cussing, be honest with you. But if you want to indulge in excessive profanity, ad hominem attacks, character assassinations, gaslighting, trolling, things of that sort, just to come on here and disrupt this program, you best hang up now, because if you don't, I'll be happy to oblige you. But having said all that, let me go to the phones. 504 number. Hello, welcome to the show.
Well, greetings. This is New Orleans here. Glad to be allowed to express my positions on some of the points that you've made. Hope you all had a very blessed Thanksgiving as I did, and we look forward to the Christmas holidays leading up into the new year. I want to address the first point I like to address is voters. I think that what I've been taught most of my life is that a voter is supposed to demand from those who seek their vote what it is they're going to do for them. So if I'm a black voter, I want to know from a politician, what are you going to do for the black communities? Now, if I get some sort of lecture in return, if I get some sort of lecture in return from that candidate, then that candidate won't have my support. And so, and that goes with other constituents, groups. They expect the candidate to address their particular interests. That's the way that works.
Okay.
So I think that a black voter has every right to demand from any candidate, white or black, Hispanic, what will you do for our community? The next point I want to address is you spoke about people's morality, that is having sex out of wedlock, children out of wedlock. So I'm not a Georgia resident, and you said you're in North Carolina, so I'm very confident you would not support Herschel Walker. You probably would more than likely support Reverend Warnock, since Herschel Walker
is guilty.
Herschel Walker is guilty of all the things you said that people shouldn't do. And the third point I want to address is this notion of victimhood. We hear whites all over the country complain about how they're victims of the left. They're victims of, the deep state. And we even see people actually act out on mass shootings because they say that they're victims of the government of something so high.
Sir, I think you need to check your phone because sometimes it sounds like you're cutting off or whatever, and I'm getting bits and pieces of your statements.
Yeah, so that's what I wanted to contribute to the conversation to address those points that you brought up there. But a voter has every right to demand from the candidate what it is that candidate would do for them. If the voter does not do that, that's not a responsible, educated voter.
Okay. Well, do you believe that everybody has an individual responsibility to deal with certain situations in their communities?
I don't see what they got to do with voting.
Well, voting thing. Okay, yes, you vote people to represent you, but that does not absolve you from any of your individual responsibilities. Okay, your elected officials can only do so much, and like I said earlier in the program, this country is run by the people. So you have to ask yourself, well, what am I willing to do? See, a lot of us, we'll go out there and we'll vote for these people, but we'll just sit back in our chairs and say, okay, problem's taken care of, but we don't do anything on an individual level.
Yeah, but that doesn't neglect the fact that a voter has every right to demand what he or she wants from that candidate.
I don't deny that. I don't deny that. But you still have to have individual. You have to have that individual response. The people that you elect, they don't live in your neighborhood. You do.
Well,
and
the
there really is no excuse
elect.
For a lot of these neighborhoods. There's no excuse for a lot of these neighborhoods to be as tore up as they are. It really isn't. It's going to happen. That's the world we live in, but there's really no excuse for, our project areas being high crime places. It's really no excuse.
Well, my point is that depending on what the office that the candidate seeks to hold, whether it's a school board position, city council, state rep, state senator, congress, mayor, whatever, the voter has a right to demand from the candidate what he or she wants that candidate to do for their community. If that voter does not do that, that is not an educated, informed, or responsible voter. And that's
okay,
the
I
point
understand
that.
I'm,
yes. So,
yeah.
So you were
I'm
speaking
understand.
When you were speaking right when you were speaking, it was as if you were demonizing those who do that.
No, I'm not demonizing them at all. What I'm saying is a lot of times these people will go out here and vote for these folks, and then they'll sit back and do nothing on an individual level. It takes all of us, not just our elected officials. What are we going to do at ground level? Okay. The elected officials, they have a certain type of responsibility, but we have a personal responsibility as well. Like, I would love to be I would love to have my own business, okay? But if I don't go out and do what I have, do what I can to own my own business, it's not going to happen, okay? Now I can sit there and talk about, the reason why I don't have my own business is because of this certain candidate right here. They're not making they're not opening up opportunities for me or anything like that. But what am I doing at my level? See, when I look at myself, I say, who's responsible for me? I can go out there and elect for vote for somebody, but the responsibility ultimately falls on me. What am I going to do?
Well, again, one is not mutually exclusive of the other. So I still say that if the person the argument of personal responsibility is one argument. That's well taken. But the conflict of voters' demand with personal responsibility, and I think that's two different things. Because if you have road works, if you have road works, street repairs, if you have
sewage systems, these things
that go neglected in cities, okay, well, I can't fix the sewage system, but I can go down and complain to the city council, the people I voted for, what the heck is going on.
I'm not denying.
Okay.
I'm not denying and all so, of that.
That
I'm
but,
not denying
but
all that, of
that. Yes, well, that's my point. And when you look at many communities across America, they have gone neglected, such as water systems, like in Jackson, Mississippi, Flint, Michigan, where people are poisoned because those in power who are cutting the deals choose to neglect certain communities. Okay? And so that falls on the elected officials.
Okay.
Okay.
I understand that, but
and so
where does the civil rights come in?
The personal responsibility, comes in when the people go and let their demands be known. That's personal responsibility. I voted for you, sir, and you haven't delivered on your promise.
Okay, I understand that, but when people's water goes bad and whatever, does that just affect black people?
Well, in the cases such as in Jackson, Mississippi, and Flint, it apparently overwhelmingly has affected black people. Because, in certain locations, you may have your demographics may work in favor of one group as opposed to another in certain areas. So,
answer me this. There are no white people in Jackson, Mississippi, or Flint, Michigan, right?
No, I'm not saying that there aren't.
Okay,
but
so
then you have to ask the question.
You might have more black people that live in these areas, but that does not mean that the reason why they neglected their services is because of black people.
Well, some of us believe because of the overwhelming population of blacks that is the case, and that has been done. You're telling me that black communities have not been neglected by the politics in the business in areas? You say that hasn't happened?
Well, keep in mind that in a lot of these areas, you got black politicians that bear responsibility too.
Absolutely.
You have black politicians that bear. But so how is that
racist
or against civil rights or anything like that?
How
is that?
Absolutely. But you also have state legislatures and governors that are overwhelmingly white that have power over these local areas and jurisdictions.
Yeah, but here's my thing.
You've
heard of Cabrini Green, right?
Yeah, in Chicago, yes.
In Chicago.
Yeah.
Now, Cabrini Green was tore down, and a lot of people were like, oh, they're gentrifying. Oh, they want to kick us black people out and everything and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know that Cabrini Green, one of the people who supported the tearing down of Cabrini Green was a very familiar name named Michelle Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Supported tearing down Cabrini Green. So we're going to still say that was racist?
Well, let me say, when she supported it, what capacity of power did she have to impact that decision?
No, it has nothing to do with the capacity.
Was she an alderman? Well, people can express their opinions, but I'm concerned by the person who expressed their opinion who's in a power decision-making capacity. So if you live in Durham and I live in New Orleans, and you make the comment, well, I think they should tear down the housing development where New Orleans lives. Well, that doesn't mean anything to me. But now if the city council person says it or the mayor says it, Well, I am definitely interested in the opinion they have because it's going to impact the decision they make. So the question is, what power capacity was Michelle Obama in when she gave her opinion about the pros of tearing down the Sabrina Green Project?
So basically, you're saying that, okay, Michelle Obama, she's surrounded by these white folks, and white folks like, ah, Michelle, we don't want to hear it. We're going to tear down because we want to get rid of these black folks.
No, my question is, when she expressed her approval of tearing down
Sabrina
Green.
But she supported. She supported the tearing down of Cabrini Green. But people were saying, oh, they just want to run the black people out of this neighborhood. But she supported it.
Yeah, but see, she didn't have
a power capacity. Just along with her white compatriots, she supported the tearing down of Cabrini Green. She supported it. You know, it doesn't matter if she was a minority or majority. She still went along with it. They didn't say, Michelle, we're going to tie you up and you better vote to, you know, get these black people out of here.
But my point is, what point is being made by using her as an example? What's the point being made?
Well, she's a black woman.
Okay, and then therefore
I mean,
what?
The complaint. Here's the complaint. This is the complaint that even here in Durham, places of gentrification, that all they're doing is just the white people trying to get the black people out. They're trying to kick the black people out because they want to take over their areas.
Well,
the people who support it, you got black people in all of your major cities. You got Baltimore. You got New York City. You got Washington, D.C. You got Charlotte, North Carolina. You got in New Orleans. These people, it's a very strong presence of black people that are in those governments.
But you are very correct in your observation that there are black people in seats of city councilships and mayorships. But then because they choose to go along with a decision of, let's say, because that was an issue here in New Orleans, too, after Hurricane Katrina, tearing down the remaining housing developments, okay, it doesn't mean that the decision they made because they're black is not racist. Because if you understand the power hierarchy in politics and in private sector business, you know developers. You know the role of developers, and developers are rich white people. And the impact they have on politicians and their campaign contributions and the network of friends that investors have. So the higher the money, the higher the power, the more stronger the voice that they have and pressure they put on the element at the bottom. You do agree with that, don't you?
Not totally. You know, I don't agree with the rich white people, you know, statement, because, you know, you got rich black people
You don't believe wealthy, powerful white people get their way in American politics?
Not exactly, because if that was the case, we still have Donald Trump as our president.
If
he had his way, you know, he'd still be our president. You know, he's a rich white man.
Well, yeah, but he's one individual.
I'm not trying to sing the praises of Donald Trump. I'm just using him as an example. If that were the case, he'd still be president.
Yeah, but remember, he's one person. He really was against a whole lot of other powerful rich white people. Okay, so he was. In fact, it was being said. He himself said that he was a victim because
No, I'm not saying he was a victim. I'm not saying he was a victim. Powerful white people. I'm not into whether he's a victim or not. I just use him as an example.
About what he said.
But
he was not powerful
white men. I'm basically what I'm doing is I'm trying to make a point that you got rich, powerful white men going against other rich, powerful white men.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Right. You see, I understand.
Yeah, but that doesn't necessarily mean that what they do is racist. Just because they're rich, white, and powerful does not mean that they are racist.
Well, you have to, but you have to look at the record of their policies towards the element of the population that's most vulnerable economically. So
we don't have to be the most vulnerable.
But statistically, black people have been among the most poor in the United States. Would you refute that?
No, I don't refute that at all. But
okay,
the thing
is, do
we have to be poor?
Well, I mean, the reality is this is where it is at the moment. Okay. And so we know that in gentrification, that the observation is that whites are replacing blacks in these neighborhoods. And I see that myself here in New Orleans. You have communities that were predominantly black, and then as they're moved out, then those who replace them are white. Now, that's the observation.
Okay, so let me ask you this.
The country. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. If a rich black person wanted to move into these areas, would he be allowed to do so?
Some rich black people are moving to some of these areas.
Okay, so where's the civil rights violations or whatever?
What do you mean? Because the gentrification process is still driven by and is benefited by those whites who are moving in. The black population
is, for the most part, removed.
The black population, for the most part, is removed.
Okay, now.
Now, you can go to Harlem. I've been going to Harlem for years. You can go to Harlem and see the difference. You can go to the D.C. area and see the difference. You can come to New Orleans where you saw the difference more so after Hurricane Katrina. You can go all over the country where you had populations of black people, and some of those areas are not the same anymore. And the replacement are white people.
So where's the civil rights violations? That's the question I'm asking. Where's the civil rights violations?
If this
was all about white supremacy, if a rich black person said, hey, I want to move into that neighborhood, and the rich white people say, well, sure, hey, there's an open house right there. Does that sound like white supremacy to you? Because if I'm correct, white supremacists do not want black people anywhere near them.
Well, you know, there are people who, when they use these terms white supremacy, they understand there's nuance to that. It doesn't manifest itself into an old way. See, many people think of racist behavior as the old way, like when I was coming up, where you had very mean, hostile attitudes from whites. It is more complex today than it's ever been. You see, you could have white people smile at you and be very nice, very, very courteous, very courteous. But then at the same time, they could still hold very hostile anti-black attitudes and dispositions. You would agree with that, would you not?
Mm. Oh, I agree with the other way around as well.
Let me tell you something. Let me tell you, when I was coming up
I need to cut you off right now because I'm at the top of the hour, and this is a good conversation. I'm loving this. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. I'm not sitting here like, oh, this guy's a bonehead. You know, I'm loving this, but I'm going to have to do some advertisements. It'll be a couple of minutes, and then I'll come on in. And my caller that's waiting on me, I'm going to bring him in, and we'll continue on the next hour. You are listening to Black by Color Only on CNM Radio.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human. And she's got this little toy she's always playing with, all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese. And guess what? Egg rolls showed up. Like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
The Internet's official rhino hunting safari.
If you have a show that you are looking to get on the air on a network, CNM is looking for you. Give us a call at 505-317-8741 or email us at conservativenationmedia, all one word, 2017 at gmail.com. Send us a short MP3 giving us a sample of what you would sound like, the day you want to be on, and the time you want to air your show, and we will do the rest. CNM is a talk radio network with a conservative bent, and we love America, her constitution, her laws, and we support our boys in blue and our military too. Come join us and get yourself on the air. The days we have available for new shows is Monday through Thursday, where we have no shows, and we can accommodate one show more on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. Give us a call and see if we can get your show on the air on CNM. And see what happens then, where America always wins.
Folks, welcome back to the program. We're at the top of the hour. If you would like to be a guest to call into the show, the call-in number is 646-478-5284. That is 646-478. We're having a very interesting discussion with New Orleans Wake Up about the situation of black people in this country, and I want to bring him back on. Okay. And caller, I see you there, 314. I see you there. I'm going to get you. I'm going to get you on here. I just wanted New Orleans Wake Up to clarify his point.
Yeah, what I wanted to say was the way in which racist treatment of black people has evolved over the decades. You see, when I was coming up here in New Orleans, where I grew up was it was probably one of the first subdivisions built for African Americans. Back in the 50s, they were building these new type of subdivisions in different cities for African Americans. And so many of the blacks were teachers and postal workers. My father worked as a longshoreman. Now, the neighboring subdivision right in front of ours was a white working class. So we had to fight every day. We were attacked every day by these white boys. We fought. Every day was hostile. We went to the store, like we would go to the department store. We were strictly told not to run around where the white kids would run around because our parents didn't want the white adults to approach us. Now, we had cousins would come down from the north to visit us or out in California. And what they would say, I remember my uncle and my aunt were saying, what was different about where they were living was that the whites were still racist, but they were polite. They would smile. You can, and they said, you could even marry a white woman up there. But they said it was still hostile to blacks, but in a different type of way, whereby in the Deep South, the hostility was there. It was raw. It was in your face. So what we see now today is, the wealthy whites are very sensitive, by the way, to the perception that they're racist. And a lot of them want to avoid direct contact with black people on that issue. So the wealthy whites find it very convenient to fund black politicians to represent many of these spaces because the black politician, because they're paid for, will work for the agenda of the wealthy class. And so these are the differences we have today than in the past. Yes.
Let me ask you the question: this situation you had with the white folks, what period of time was this?
This was throughout the 60s and the 70s.
Okay. Now I was born in 1968, and pretty much born at the tail end
of the
civil
rights. I'm older than you. Yeah, I'm older than you. Yeah.
I perceive that. I'm not going to be disrespectful, but I was born at the tail end.
Let me get one more point. Before I be quiet, let me get one more point in. I want to talk about the police. Now, black people everywhere in America always knew that the local police department was very hostile and mean-spirited to black people. You know, when I was a kid, we used to have family vacation. We used to have family vacation in Oakland, in San Francisco, in Oakland, and Los Angeles, because a lot of Louisiana people, the black people, during the Great Migration, went up there in the 50s to work jobs. And I remember Oakland, and I never met the Black Panthers. I knew of them because I had cousins that would go to the meetings, but they just talked about how brutal the police department was there. And coming up in New Orleans, we knew how brutal the police department. Now, mind you, many of us here in New Orleans, we're very light-skinned black people. Some of us look even like white people. But they treat all us black people brutally during that time. If you know Mark Muriel is the president of the Urban League. And Mark Muriel's father was the first black mayor of New Orleans. His father looked just like a white man. His father was an attorney. I grew up with him. I played with him as a kid. They lived around the corner from us. Now, Mark Muriel's father was an attorney at this time. He wasn't the mayor yet. And he was outside of his home, and the police told him, get inside, N-word. That's what they said, get inside, N-word. He said, I'm in front of my house. I'm not going inside. And they beat him to a pulp. I'll never forget that. They beat him to a pulp. So the police has always been known to be very brutal.
But that was back then, though.
People. No, if you look at FBI data, not FBI data, you look at classified documents today, and it's still today. Police, they just had a case here. They had a case here where a white police officer was arrested and confessed that this little girl was being raped. And so he befriended the little girl, and then he ultimately raped the little girl. There are all kind of cases coming out with sheriffs and police departments talking about black people. They had a sheriff in one town. Yeah, this is still today, sir. This is still today.
Well, let me say this. Let me say this. I'm 54 years old. I just turned 54 last month, October 16th. I have never had a problem with the police. Not really. I've never had a problem with them. I've never been pulled over because I'm black. I've never had them disrespect me because I'm black or anything like that. And the thing that bothers me the most. Oh, I've been pulled over several times.
You don't really know if they pulled you over because you were black or not.
But that's my point right there. We don't know what these guys are thinking. We can't just assume that, speeding the police officer saw me and my wife was like, hopefully he didn't see me. And he came onto the road, and before he even turned his lights on, I pulled to the side of the road because I said, I know he caught me. He came up. He was very cordial with me, gave me my ticket, and we were on our way. But he didn't pull me over because I was black. But that's the thing. We say, well, you know, we don't understand what that's my point right there. You don't know if he pulled you over because you were black. We just assume it because he's white and I'm black that he pulled me over because I'm black. And I can tell you, every time that I have been pulled over, it was because I broke the law. Three times I've been pulled over because my tags had expired. Two times I got pulled over because I was speeding. And I was breaking the law. And I never cut an attitude with the police. Wait a minute. I never cut an attitude with the police officer because I knew I was wrong. I didn't sit there and say, oh, you just pulled me over because I'm black. He pulled me over because I broke the law.
let me ask you this. Have you been keeping up with all of the stories of police officers?
Oh, yeah. I keep up with them all the time. You heard about the one recently?
Where the jailers went in and beat up this black guy in the jail, was on camera, and they just arrested them. And what about Breonna Taylor case? What about that whole
Breonna
cover
Taylor
up?
Was not killed.
Are you familiar with the cover up that was done?
Do you Do you think Breonna Taylor was killed because she was black?
I believe that the assault, in fact, by the way, that's a very interesting question, because it is known now that developers did want that section of the community for gentrification.
No, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, believe that Breonna Taylor was killed because she was black? Well, how do you know that she was killed because she was black?
I believe that. Absolutely. Because of the information that has subsequently been revealed as a result of her case and situation.
Okay, so what was that information, though?
Well, one information, it is known now that the whole warrant was made up. The whole reason to go there was made up. How the police
show me where that warrant was made up, because her name was on the warrant.
The officers involved resigned and confessed to wrongdoing.
Okay.
That's news.
Here's the thing, though, but how do we know that they did that because she was black? Because this happens to white people,
Because the neighborhood was a neighborhood inhabited by black people, and developers wanted that neighborhood for gentrification. And so the police, by police showing up at people's door, listen to how this works, because this has been documented. By the police being called to the house, gave the city reason to kick the people out of the house and take the property over.
Okay, so
all of that's been revealed.
So why did they just prick on Breonna Taylor and not anyone else? Because Breonna Taylor lived on the upper floor.
Because that was one of the pieces of property that was targeted to be taken.
Well, this was a complex. I think it's four apartment. Four different
it's
apartments
still a property.
In one building.
It's still a property. It's still
yeah,
a property.
Yeah, but why did they go up to Breonna Taylor's place?
You got to ask the officers that confessed that they lied. Okay.
Okay. Which ones confessed that they lied?
Look, sir, you can look that up. That's public knowledge. That's public.
This is a story I've been following since the beginning, and I have never seen any public confessions from an officer saying, we went up there, we killed Breonna Taylor because we just wanted to kill a black woman.
The officers confessed that the whole operation was fake.
It wasn't fake. I can guarantee you it was not fake. Breonna Taylor got caught with the wrong crowd. She got caught with the wrong crowd. First of all, when the police officers, it was a no-knock warrant. They came to her apartment. They knocked anyway. And when they knocked, her boyfriend fired at the police officers, hit one in the thigh. They returned fire. Now, the boyfriend was not killed, but Breonna Taylor was hit like five times.
They didn't know who was firing at them. The Justice Department announced today. Let me read this to you. The Justice Department announced today that former Louisville Metro Police Department detective Kelly Gottlieb, 35, pleaded guilty in federal court to conspiring to commit two federal crimes. Gottlieb admitted that she conspired with another former Louisville Police Department detective both to falsify an affidavit to obtain a warrant to search Breonna Taylor's home without probable cause, which resulted in Taylor's death, and to cover up the false warrant by lying to criminal investigators after Taylor was killed. Now, that's public record.
Okay. Well, why was her name on the warrant, though?
Oh, you got to ask the officers who made it all up.
She was part of a drug scene that went on that night.
Detective Kelly Gottlieb pleaded guilty in federal court to conspiring to commit two federal crimes. Gottlieb admitted that she conspired with another former detective both to falsify an affidavit to obtain a warrant to search Breonna Taylor's home without probable cause, which resulted in Taylor's death, and to cover up the false warrant by lying to criminal investigators after Taylor killed. Don't argue with me. Argue with the documents.
Okay, well, what I'm saying is, where's the part where she was killed because she was black?
I am going to let you investigate the rest on your own.
I've investigated. Okay. I don't see the part where it was black, but, where she was killed because she was black.
The reason why the police officers felt that they can commit the fraud and get away with it is because people would believe she was guilty, like you are articulating right now, because she is black. Okay.
So that's why they did that.
They thought it was easier. It was low hanging fruit. You can do that to a black person and get away with it because everybody's going to believe their master is guilty.
My question is that never ever happens to white people. Never.
Well, you name one. Name one it happened to. Name a white person it happened to.
That doesn't mean that it doesn't happen to white people.
Show me the proof.
You know, George.
Show me the proof.
You know, George. You know the case of George Floyd, right?
Mm-hmm.
You heard the case of George Floyd, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, what happened? What happened with George Floyd? No,
I don't want
to. No, George Floyd was a black guy.
Let me
answer my question. What happened to George Floyd?
Well, I'm not going to recount that. We all know what happened to George Floyd. What's your point?
No, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to make a point. I'm pretty sure you know what happened to George Floyd.
Yeah, we all saw what happened to George Floyd. We all saw it. Yeah.
Okay, and now let me staple the record that I don't agree with what they did to George Floyd.
Well, there's no more need for any more conversation then.
Okay. Well, yes, it is. You ever heard of a man named?
Wait a minute.
Slow down. You ever heard of a man named Tony Tempa?
No, sir. Mm-mm.
You never heard of Tony Tempa? Are you sure you never heard of Tony Tempa?
Uh-uh.
Tony Tempa, in 2016, was a guy, he was kind of loopy up in the head, and he hadn't taken his medication. Mm-hmm. He called the police to tell them about the situation. The police arrived, and he ended up with a knee on his neck for 14 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And when he passed away, it was a similar situation to George Floyd. And when he passed away, the police were sitting there, you know, laughing, making fun. Oh, is he dead? And these police officers went to trial, and they were found not guilty. So here's the thing. Mm-hmm. Here's my point right here. What race was Tony Tempa?
I don't know. I'm not familiar with the case.
He was a white guy.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel Shavers, you ever heard of him?
No, Mm-mm.
Daniel Shavers was suspected of selling drugs in a hotel. I forget which the city was, and I seen the video of this. Daniel Shavers. The police told him to come out of his room. He was on his hands and knees and whatever, and they told him, stop what you're doing, slow down. And Tony Tempa's like, please don't shoot me, please don't shoot me. And it looked like he was reaching for something in his waistband, and the police shot him dead.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what color Daniel Shavers was?
I don't know, sir. What color was he?
He was a white guy.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
isn't it amazing that we hear about these incidents with police involving the shooting of a white person? We don't hear about that, but if it's a white police officer that shoots a black person, we're all over that. Oh yeah, that's racist.
Well,
oh,
let me say this doesn't happen.
Wait a minute. Let me cut you right there. Let me bring this other caller in because he's been here a while. Hello,
what do you say to Vincent? How's everything, man?
What's up, Bianchi? What's cracking?
Oh, I was just hoping that you and your wife enjoyed your brief little holiday stay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, our turkey's all digested.
How you doing, Mr. Warren? How's everything?
Oh, you Mr. Gumbo, and we had smothered squirrel, and we had a coon. We baked a coon, and we fried turkey. You missed all that.
Well, I tell you what, I would have came down to get some barbecue coon because that's good.
No, we baked it. We didn't barbecue. We just baked it and had the sweet potatoes around it because my cousin killed a coon. And so, but I like the baby coons. They tender, and you could smother them in a brown gravy.
Yeah, well, like I say, I like that. Matter of fact, I had a worker. One of my employees used to bring his lunchbox to work and leave it in the trailer. We go in his lunchbox and see what he had, and then one time he had some barbecue raccoon.
Okay.
So me and a couple other guys, we ate that up and left the bones in his lunchbox.
Yeah.
He came in for lunch and looked in there. He had nothing but bones. What was he ever mad? So, no,
you're
that's
not,
a good eating,
watch,
man.
Well,
you wouldn't watch the Bayou Classic tonight?
No, Warren, I'm not that big of a football fan. I'm a baseball fan.
Okay.
How's your family down there?
Well, why?
How's the family?
Fine, let the gentleman go on with his show there. He wanted to get your input to what we're talking about here.
While we're at it, I got another caller. I'm going to bring this caller in, too. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show.
Oh, sucky now. I think it might be the time of the fruit bat.
Hey, Sarge, what's happening?
Oh, man, it's all good. How's it going with you? How was your Thanksgiving? How's your family's doing?
Everything's fine, Sarge. Everything's fine.
Outstanding, man. Thank you very much for sending me that little article from the IRS about Joe Lewis, man. I have archived it, and I want to give it as a
reference. That was a shame
point.
How they do. Now,
it's
that man's
shame,
family
man.
There deserves reparations. His family deserves reparations.
Thank you for that article. I read that article today, and I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Joe Lewis's family, if anybody deserves compensation, his family deserves compensation.
I tell you, man, that's
the
man who deserves reparations right there.
Yeah.
And by the way, you know, like I knew generally about that story, but what you sent me went into a great more detail, so I really appreciated it to kind of flesh in some of the details I really didn't know that much about. So,
well, you know, I took my grandson and me was in Washington, D.C., in Arlington National Cemetery. I remember walking down this path and turned to the right and looked at one tombstone and said, man, this is Joe Lewis. Yeah, I knew about the story long ago, but not in the details the way it spelled it out in that article. But
I
said before, that was a total shame the way they treated that man, Internal Revenue Service.
Yeah,
if any family deserved to be compensated, they owe him millions. Because
family.
If you equate the amount of money that he made and had to pay out in today's dollars, it would equivalent to that. But
and he donated it to Soldier Sailors Relief Funds in the main.
The ISO.
Mm-hmm.
A USO. USO. Yeah.
And actually relief funds to soldiers and sailors. I thought it was just out there. And he meant it when he gave it. He wasn't in trouble when he gave that money up.
Mm-mm.
He gave it up because he wanted to. Because the man had, you know, not only was he a serviceman himself, he understood what was at stake. The country was literally, I guess you could say, in one of his greatest existential crises, and he thought no matter what he needed to do his part for those, in particular for those who had laid their lives on the line for it.
Well, you know, even Matt Snelling contributed to his burial and came and was one of his pallbearers, the German that he defeated.
Max Schmeling. Yeah, Max Schmeling had a great friendship. Schmeling was actually kind of an anti-Nazi, even though he did serve as a Fallschirmjäger, a German paratroop, when he jumped into Crete during the Battle of Crete, which is really amazing. He survived that one, given the high rate of German paratrooper casualties. But, yeah, he was actually a big friend of Joe Lewis. Big friend.
Well,
When Joe Lewis was destitute, he helped him out with money.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, let me get in on this.
Max Schmeling was not the Aryan Nazi that propaganda tried to paint him out to be at the time of the first Schmeling-Lewis fight.
Yeah.
Come on in there,
gentlemen. Let me get in. let me get in on here because we are having a very interesting conversation with I think his name, I don't know his regular name, but it shows up.
His name is Warren, Mr. Warren.
New Orleans, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And he was telling me earlier that given my explanation of things going on in the country today, that I wouldn't vote for Herschel Walker, but I would vote for Raphael Warnock. And I was telling him I would not vote for no Raphael Warnock because this man is a pastor.
I wouldn't vote for Raphael Warnock either. Given the literature he put out on what he stands for.
Let me ask y'all conservatives this. Let me ask you conservatives this.
This man is a pastor, but he supports abortion.
But let me ask you this. Durham, let me ask you this, Durham. Before I called in, you gave a monologue about the ills and evils of what you call that,
yep,
sex out of marriage, all that. You know, Herschel Walker is guilty,
yeah,
of all that immoral behavior. So how could you be consistent with your beliefs and come back and support him?
Okay.
Who isn't? I'm not supporting his infidelities. I'm not supporting his infidelities.
You're ready to condemn other black males for allegedly doing the same thing Herschel Walker does, but you give Herschel Walker a pass.
I'm not giving him a pass. I don't support what Herschel Walker did.
Here you got a man that's a pastor. The pastor of a church.
You put the question to you, Vince, I suppose naturally you should answer it, but I have a ready response for those sorts of things that, well, why are you voting for Herschel Walker when he doesn't check the box marked X, Y, Z, and so forth? I got a ready answer for that one. It's not at all hard to figure out. This is an election. I have to make a choice. I have a choice in this election between a man who wants me to pay with my taxes for the abortions of others, as well as supporting an agenda that is proven to be destructive and inimical to the interests of the United States in the form of energy, in the form of border security, in the form of national security policy, in the form of every policy I could imagine that is important to the United States. And on the other hand, I have another candidate who, while admittedly flawed, as all of us are, I have a choice to elect him when he says he's going to oppose every single item on that agenda, and in fact, support policies that are the opposite of it. Now, given that reality, of course, my other two options are either to write in another name or to not vote at all for either man. There is nothing on God's green earth that will ever get me to cast a vote for Warnocky under any circumstance, even with a gun to my head. So that's out. Now, the question is, will it be Walker? Will it be a write-in or will it be not to vote at all? And given the existential threat that will represent a 49-51 Senate, with the Democrats able to determine the committees on the Senate, and Kamala Harris able to cast a tie-breaking vote on most votes, there is no doubt whatsoever in my mind, no matter how reluctant I would be. And remember, I didn't support Herschel Walker in the primary. I voted for the Navy SEAL guy. But since Walker is there now, and the option is Warnocky, no way am I not going to vote for him. End of story. There's nothing more to discuss as far as I'm concerned.
Well, you know, Sarge, I just look at all that as hypocrisy, because other people who make the same kind of choices based off their interests, you all criticize them and accuse them of not knowing how to be good voters and being brainwashed and being suckered in.
Well, what are the options? That's my question.
What are the options?
What is that
people,
thing? And
well,
when I weigh everything in the
policy,
aggregate and the negative, the choice for me has to be one.
But,
period.
But see what you all do.
Again,
what you all do
is not,
you all bring.
This is not an election for a church pastor. I'm not vote, and I never vote for Warnocky for pastor either. So,
well,
I mean, he's
what,
losing on every, possible, on every possible option. Warnocky for
see,
me
you,
is a loser.
So the point is, Herschel Walker is exempt from criticism of immoral behavior.
First of all, understand one thing about Herschel Walker. Herschel Walker put most of these allegations in a book. He published them in a book. Now, some of these allegations, so he's already confessing them, so I'm already aware of it. Number two, some of these allegations are yet to be proved. They are just that, allegations, with no proof whatsoever. So you can believe them or not, that's your option to do. At this point, given the fact that the evidence is insufficient for proof, I will choose not to believe them or, at the very least, remain agnostic on the subject. So that, again, deals with things about him that I already know about from his book. I already know them. I have looked at them, weighed them in the balance, and since being a Christian, one of the main tenets of being a Christian is the notion of redemption and forgiveness, provided you confess your sins and vow to do no more. I say to that, I say, as far as I'm concerned, he's forgiven all of those sins. Now, Warner G., on the other hand, appears to have sins that have substantial substantiation in the form of his wife saying he ran over her foot and that he abused her. And given the fact that he is almost silent on the subject and refused to even speak on it, I'll tell you what. When it comes down to basic morality and with basic integrity, I'm going to give Walker the bonus over that. Given the fact he confessed most of the things that he's being accused of.
Sarge, I know what y'all rationale would be. It's just hypocritical is what it is.
Well, you can say that if you wish. I think it's well-founded.
It's hypocritical.
You're free to believe that, sir.
It's not hypocritical.
I believe my objection and my foundation is well founded, and I intend to stick by it to convince everyone I can that they should go with my idea when it comes to
the You only apply moral standards to people who are not Republicans or vote Republicans. But when they're Republican, you don't see anything wrong with what they do. Just being a Republican makes them right.
I've made clear my objections about Walker, his past, my lack of objections based on the notion of redemption, the fact that many of these allegations are unproven, unsubstantiated, and come at the last minute. They stake to high heaven like the ones against Kavanaugh. No, I don't support this. I don't trust it.
Here's the thing.
If you wish to accept them, be my guest. But people on your side refuse to even accept the possibility that Hunter Biden's laptop might be legitimate, and this man who might be selling foreign influence to foreign entities, including the Chinese Communist Party, he ought to be forgiven and made president of the United States. No way am I going to be shamed into not voting for Warnocky, given what has come from the other side. There's no way.
You know, if I may say something, I supported Marion Barry, who was a crack at it because of his policies. His performance as a politician. I don't give a damn what they do out in their private life.
But Pianchi, you all know Herschel Walker is ignorant and stupid and dumb.
No, I don't think Herschel Walker is ignorant and stupid. I don't think that. Matter of fact, I support it.
We're not going to do that. We're not going to do that. How in the world are you going to sit there and say that Herschel Walker is stupid and dumb because of the way he talks or whatever? No, we're not going to do that. We're not going to
do that. Have you seen John Fetterneck lately?
Yeah, Fetterneck talks worse than that.
I have no shame when it comes to this.
I mean, really.
Being inarticulate does not mean stupid.
I'm so impressed with Herschel Walker. I contribute to his campaign with money 3 times. Got the receipts to show it for those who don't believe.
Me too, twice. And I tell you what, given that, I really expected Warnocky to knock Herschel Walker out of the ballpark in the debate. He did not.
Did not.
Walker unbelievably had him rocking on his heels. I couldn't believe it. I expected Warnocky to mop the floor with him. He did not. So when you come to stupidity, I tell you what, he surprised me, it didn't matter to me what the outcome of the debate would have been. It wouldn't have mattered anyway. There is nothing on God's green earth that can make me support Warnocky. Nothing. But
well, if you look at
Herschel Walker actually scored a TKO on Raphael Warnock, I say to myself, now I can absolutely sleep sound.
Look at the things he supports. He put this literature out in people's mailboxes. He supports abortion through the 9th month. He supports open borders.
Existential problem for the United States with this political with this election this year. Whether we're going to have security on the border, whether we're going to have energy independence, whether we're going to go into a major recession and/or depression deliberately caused by policies of the Biden administration. No, sir. I have rarely had less ambiguity about who to vote for in an election than this one. Rarely.
He support tougher energy. See, the federal government has no business telling Louisiana what to do with its natural resources. That is something that has came about recently. That is nothing that the federal government has any business doing.
Yesterday, he intends to come confiscate my private property, which I just used earlier today, which is the reason I'm late coming into the show today, Vince, because I had a friend of mine said he's got his wild hogs are going crazy down his farm in southwest Georgia. So I took my AR-15 that I have newly chambered in 350 Legend, which is an ideal cartridge to kill wild boars, which do enormous crop damage every year. And I took my AR-15 with its 30-round magazine, and we got a sounder of boars, and we were able to shoot them with our semi-automatic AR-15s. And Joe Biden wants to confiscate my lawfully owned property from me. There's no way I'm voting for this man or anything on his agenda. Nothing.
Well, that must have been you, I heard, while we was down there on the arc on the Georgia-Florida border doing the same thing.
Fly with the lead. We got 16 boars today. 16.
We were shooting them at night.
They weren't all boars.
We were shooting them at night with infrared. We were using infrared.
And Joe Biden wants to take away my lawfully owned property, which I have owned for 10 years and has never harmed a human being ever.
Sarge, I've killed them with homemade long bow that my cousin made. Bow and arrow. I've killed the wild hog.
Well, I tell you what,
you're
brave to do that.
Get them next when they get all the AR-15s.
Because one of them get past, if you miss, you in trouble.
Remember what they did to the long bowman after Agincourt. They cut off their thumb and forefingers, remember? Because they were worried about whether or not the long bowman might cause a threat to the king. See, you know, one thing about tyrants, man, they believe they don't want you to have the means to resist them. And they know, that's why the framers of the Constitution made sure the Second Amendment was there to protect us against these incipient tyrants.
And Joe Biden let me cut in right quick. I got another call. Oh my goodness, I got two more callers. Let me get these two callers in.
Where's that Irondale?
I don't know where Irondale is today. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show.
Listening.
Okay, just listening. Okay, got you there. Hello, caller.
No,
welcome to the show.
I'm glad Brother Warren took time to show up today because, you know, I mean, look, it takes guts to come into a venue where you're hostile to the point of view, but we're always welcome to hear the point of view because I think the best solution to decide what is best is more speech, including Brother Warren's point of view and all people who think like him. I think it is vital to have it all there so we can have it out in the open to decide what is best for all. And let each individual decide what is best for them.
Well, that's good that you feel that way, Sarge, since somebody else showed up.
I've always felt that
way. We got another caller in. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show.
How y'all doing?
That sounds like Nodge. Nodge, you must eat a lot. You sound fatter.
Nah.
It's all that turkey, man. He's still digesting it, probably. There won't be no turkey next year given the Biden administration. He ain't going to be able to afford it.
I thought
I was talking to an adult.
You know what? A friend of mine down in Atlanta told me he bought 5 pounds of chitlins, and it cost him $27. I said, damn.
You're gracious.
Hell, here in a shop in Baton Rouge, a fish shop, I went in there about 2 weeks ago and bought a whole red snapper and a catfish. You know how much that cost me? $52.
Good day in the morning. Mm.
You better know people that fish. You can get it for free. You know people that fish.
You guys realize this is going on all over the world, right? That supply chains have been in distress, and because of that, everybody's paying inflated prices across the globe. And you guys realize
supply chain, a rod and reel? You got to be kidding me.
Well,
riding reel and string with a hook on the end. Are you kidding me?
I would think you would know that expenses weigh more than just the simple supply chain. Once you have to pay more for one thing, it increases the prices down the line, which means what? He has to charge the customer more. I thought you guys were pro-capitalism.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing. There ain't no line from the Mississippi River, and, of course, the red snapper is out in the ocean. Well, there ain't no red line supply chain from the Mississippi River to Tony's place over there on Plank Road, right about, a little bit outside of Baton Rouge. So
interesting,
I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know if you know about an event that happened about 10 years ago, but there was something in that Gulf region that not only disrupted fishing, but it caused a huge increase in how you get your fishing, especially what I would call safe food that you get from that area. So the fact that you don't know that and live in that region, I don't know what to tell you, bro.
Well, the fact that you don't know that the Mississippi River don't begin in the Gulf. The Gulf is the mouth of the Mississippi River, and all along the way, you got catfish.
How do you think pollution works, sir? Do you think it just the Gulf?
Pollution don't run upstream; it runs downstream.
The Mississippi.
You're disrupting this show. Now stick to the topic. Lead the fish alone.
As soon as I started speaking, you tried to interrupt me because Brother Warren is here fighting two fists against you guys. He can't let anybody finish the fish.
If Warren is dependent on you to cover his back, he got big problems. I can tell you that now.
As many times as I can hardly hear you.
Sounds like you're in a tunnel or something like that. It sounds like you got a muffle over your mouth.
Vince, I'm willing to give Naj that there are worldwide inflationary pressures that undoubtedly would have placed pressure on inflation in the United States. I'll give you that, Naj. But there is no way that I'm going to say it's a 10% difference from 1.2% under Trump to almost 10% today. I'm never going to give you that. Given the fact of this man's deliberate policies with regard to spending, his deliberate policies with regard to energy policy, there is no way I'm going to give you 8% inflation caused by worldwide inflation. Absolutely not.
What do you think about this CBS report?
Biden has contributed to it substantively.
What do you think about this CBS report, Sarge, finally coming back and admitting that Hunter Biden's laptop? Oh, yeah, that's for real.
Now you're a little late to the party.
We'll got ahead of you on that.
Can I cut in here right quick? Let Naj make his point.
It's your show,
yeah. Let him make his point. Yeah, let him make his point.
Yeah, okay. So the first thing to address what Sarge just said. So there was a bill proposed by one party to address price gouging by corporations who've made huge profits during this period of inflation with supply chains disrupted. That's one aspect of this. Now, if you want to blame Biden for all this and say that if Trump had won the election that we wouldn't see what we're seeing, I would say either you're biased or you don't want to open your eyes enough to say, okay, this is a global issue. No matter who is sitting in that seat, this is something that the United States will be facing. Bianchi, be quiet. This is something that the United States will be facing. Now, me and him have had this conversation before. But he said Biden policy. And the question to you would be, what policy are you saying caused an inflation spike when we can go back to 2008 and realize that government spending does not cause inflation when we saw the majority of the world use their central bank to pump money into the economy and we saw no inflation. But during this disruption of COVID, we saw inflation. Two different things.
Here's a question. We talk about price gouging by the big companies and everything. How come they weren't price gouging before now?
Well, we've had that problem before during emergency situations like Katrina or different hurricane events and things like that. But to say that why
no,
don't
but
they
what,
do
I'm
that
saying, just, what I'm saying, well, what I'm saying is,
the question.
How come, how, okay, before Donald Trump left office, I think gas was like $2.30-something, if I'm correct. How come the big companies didn't price gouge us then?
It was
$1.65
here.
Now you're talking about two separate things. Now, if you want to talk about gas prices and then you want to talk about global inflation, we can do that. But just realize you're talking
about
two
separate
things.
No, I'm not talking about two separate things. I'm just saying, you know, you're saying the companies are price gouging. Couldn't they have done that a long time ago?
Well, it's difficult to price gouge during a period of normalcy, right?
So the most of the time when we see price gouging, it'll be after a hurricane.
I don't think so.
Or a tornado.
What would you call not normal? And how is it that we here in the United States, in Louisiana, I'm going to say what I got to say. Now, you're going to listen, or we're going to run you off here. Now, which one are you going to have?
The man asked me a question, and I was answering it.
All right. Let me know when I can address you.
All right. Thank you. So to finish answering the man's question, typically when we see price gouging, it's because of an emergency of a hurricane, a tornado, something that happens in a local area where companies are able to do that. Now, when you say, okay, why are we seeing this now on the global reach? Well, if you go to England right now, they just ran out one PM after another and just got a new one because of this same issue. So it's not a thing that's localized to America. This is going on over there too. So the question becomes, okay, at what point do we address this in a real way and say, okay, we got a corporate problem here and we also have a supply chain problem, rather than playing politics and yelling out some politician's name and thinking that they can either solve or cause global inflation, which is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the point.
I don't think anybody said it was global inflation. I think they're talking about what goes on here in the United States.
The United States economy is integrated worldwide.
My paying $52 for two fish has nothing to do over in the rest of the world.
That's a rather disingenuous answer from you, Naj, because the price of these.
Oh, go ahead. I'm listening, sir.
Sound like they got cut off.
Oh, Sarge got dropped. He'll call back. I wanted to hear what.
No,
he
didn't get dropped. According to my cue, he's still up there, but for some reason, I can't hear him. It just got dropped or whatever.
Just get shipped to market.
You know, go
ahead. Say nothing to the manufacture of food, harvesting of food, and agriculture is directly tied to the cost of diesel. The reason the price of energy has gone up. It's because of the announced policies of Joe Biden. He just said there'll be no more drilling. This causes a change in behavior among the companies. Yes, they're hedging their bets for the future based upon what they hear the president say, based upon the fact they're not renewing oil leases on government land. They are hedging their bets on the future. It is a normal response of the market in response to governmental announced policy. So please stop. Don't give us this disingenuousness about its corporate price gouging. It is the marketplace responding always does to governmental threat.
We missed your earlier point because for some reason everything cut off. You all were still in the queue, but it seemed like everything just cut off, and we missed your earlier point.
Well, it's simple. When you increase the money supply, like from careless borrowing, and your product supply goes down, your price is going up, and vice versa. And that's what you have seen with this administration. Careless spending that's going to carry out the debt into that of your grandchildren and great-grandchildren. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And Tiaki, don't forget corporate greed. That they benefit from high prices. They make huge profits.
Yeah, but corporations are publicly traded. Corporations are owned by citizens. Corporations pay dividends to its shareholders, which supplement especially retirees' retirement. And they make hell of a contributions to the community like ExxonMobil does in the state of Louisiana.
The corporate profits gouge the American taxpayers and consumers.
I have never heard any economist that is worth their salt with any reputable reputation whatsoever say that when you flood the economy with specie fiat currency, you flood it with specie currency, and there aren't goods and service to pursue that money, that there is not rampant inflation, because that's exactly what happened.
Absolutely.
Too much money in circulation with too few goods and services to get it. It is a basic rule of inflation.
In Louisiana, Louisiana leading up to 2020, gasoline here was $1.65 a gallon for about 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. So, again,
and you know it, Warren.
Yeah, so to address the gas.
And again, the price of diesel is linked to the price of everything. There's no getting around it. Over $6 a gallon, it's going to affect the price of everything. And the fuel manufacturers, being rational, are simply hedging their bets based upon the stated policies of the United States government in the form of threats.
Yeah,
that's
so,
what it is.
Okay, so I guess you guys have said your piece. Let me just respond to what you said. If what you guys are saying is true, then we should see gas prices go down by at least 30% by the next week. Because yesterday Biden took away the sanctions against Venezuela, and they're going to allow Venezuela to pump gas in retaliation for what Saudi Arabia is doing to gas prices globally. Like the fact that you guys are talking about this and don't
understand. Well, let me address that. Let me address that.
Well, I'm almost done, man. I'm almost done talking.
Well, we'll let you go on. Let me address that one point, because you're going to throw out 15 points, go clean back to your child in elementary school.
And then when I make the correction,
let me say this. What is cheaper? Gas, oil coming out of the ground in Texas, being processed and refined there in Ohio by a black company, and I can't think of the name right now, and supplied to the state of Louisiana. Which is cheaper? Is that same gas coming all the way from Venezuela? Come on now. The gas coming from Venezuela has got to travel 1,000 miles.
Have we factored in the price of energy necessary to ship it by tanker to the United States? Have we factored that in yet? Hey, it's going to take a lot of energy to get it here.
Can we have some disciplined soldier over here? Can we have some discipline?
Wait a minute. Have you factored in the price of the energy it's going to take to get the oil from Venezuela to the United States?
Yeah. So,
like I said, we have our own domestic supply here. You know, and that's been shut down by the Biden administration. We have our own domestic supply here, so why do we have to depend on gas or oil from Venezuela when we have probably the biggest reserve in the world here in the United States?
Thank you. I'm glad you asked that question. So here's how we address it. Now we understand that gas prices aren't determined locally. You have a global market of gas prices, and OPEC is always going to be the biggest driver.
No, but you don't understand when Joe Biden shut down that XL pipeline.
I actually know
When Joe Biden shut down the XL pipeline, that was the beginning of what we are seeing right now. We shouldn't be depending on oil or energy from other countries.
So to say that it was shut down and that caused a drastic change is erroneous.
Let me get in. We're going to shut down our oil. We're going to shut down our oil here in the United States. But we're going to say, we want to get oil from Saudi Arabia. We want to get oil from Venezuela. You don't think that's going to affect gas prices here in this country?
He goes to Saudi Arabia. He goes to Saudi Arabia and asks them, don't raise the price of oil until after the midterm.
Yeah.
He goes to Saudi Arabia and asks the prince not to raise the price of oil until after the midterm. And that black refinery in Ohio is called Hightower. He ranks probably number 10 on Black Enterprise top 100 businesses here in the United States, and I know him very well.
Yeah, so the biggest refinery is in Port Arthur, and it's owned by Saudi Arabia, sold to them during the Trump administration. But as far as you guys, what you're trying to say is we can produce oil domestically and shift prices. What I'm trying to explain to you guys is, no, a global market, it depends on what the supply is and what everybody is doing, independent of the United States. So the Saudis pulling back on oil production causes the spike. So now we've got Venezuela to pump more, which is going to bring down the price. We don't actually need the physical oil from Venezuela. You're doing that to change the market cap. That's the whole purpose.
So why
now,
can't we? My point is this, though.
Wait a minute. Hang on for a second.
Oil is fungible, Naj. I don't know where you're getting this from.
I don't know where you get that mess from, Naj. I got members in my family that's in the oil business. My youngest one just became a petroleum engineer working for ExxonMobil. He says it's not true.
That's great.
I don't know where you come from. What kind of business you in? Before we go any further, what kind of business you in?
Now, the man just drained the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, which had been filled up when it was like $24 to $26 a barrel, and now he's practically drained it. and it's going to cost $85 to $95 a barrel to replenish it. This is your idea of efficient economics? Really, Nas? No wonder we don't want you people to be in power.
And then I'm not going to talk over you. I'm going to get this one point over. Because you say some ridiculous stuff, man, it's just astonishing.
Well, you don't know what
you're
talking
about. But here's the point. If your type of ideology on how business runs, then you question why some blacks don't shop with blacks. Well, you got the reason why right there. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, okay. So now you want to get into another red herring. I'll finish talking about the topic that we were all speaking about. So, again, go to Greg Palatz, great investigative reporter. His book, Vulture's Picnic. He documents not only the oil price gouging, but also how the sausage is made when it comes to global pricing. What OPEC has been able to do over the past 50 years, creating a monopoly and kind of pushing everybody around as far as oil, it's becoming a problem in the sense that the Saudis used to be our junior partners. They kind of agreed with what we wanted. And now it appears they're looking east. They're making these partnerships with China and Russia, and they won't make a deal with Biden on getting that price lower, which is why we removed the sanctions in Venezuela, and we're going to cause some pressure on them because, again, they're one issue country, basically, when you talk about their resources. So the Saudis, this is a real interesting moment. We've never had a situation where the Saudis have kind of bucked back against the United States when it comes to pricing and what needs to be done.
I got a few minutes left in this.
It's off. The Saudis are mad at him for what he's doing with Iran, trying to renegotiate the Iran deal. That's why they did it. He's inept diplomatically. He's an inept and a fool. Wait a minute. Let's go on with this thing you just looked at. I'm going to be like Alexander the Great. I'm just cut this damn Gordian knot. The reason why Biden's doing all of these tap dancing and manipulations and circumlocutions is because he will do anything to avoid turning on the United States energy spigot because it is an ideological sacrament for him and the people that allow his corruptocracy. That is why he's doing what he's doing. Anything to avoid turning on the United States energy spigot. Anybody with an ounce of common sense knows it.
Okay, so
and that goes around to my that goes around
and
to
it
my,
shouldn't be no discussion. It shouldn't be no discussion on global jack.
That goes around to my point. Why can't we drill for oil in this country?
Vincent, I'm going to get out of here. But let me say this. It shouldn't even be no daggone discussion about what goes on in the rest of the globe. We concerned about what goes on here in the United States. And as I said before, what Trump done with his releasing of regulations on fracking, the states can handle that. We don't need the federal government to handle that.
That's right.
All prices related to gasoline at the pump was about $1.65 for at least two damn years. We depended on what was produced in the United States.
Let me ask you globally. I'll see you, Vincent. I thought it was a good one. We actually do produce oil. We produce more now than we ever have in the past 100 years. But again, the part that you guys, I guess I'm not doing a good job of explaining is, if we were to produce,
and why are you trying to handle something you know nothing goddamn about?
Well, actually,
I told you about that.
You don't, which is why you keep getting so upset. You're an angry young man. So anyway, getting back to what I was saying. So if we were to produce oil production by 50% tomorrow, what would the Saudi response be? What would the Chinese response be? What would the Russian response be? And the answer would be they would pump more because they can take the losses longer than our private companies can because they are what? They are government-owned entities. So if you think you're going to have a price war against government-owned entities, your corporations are the ones who are going to take the loss.
That's why the United States don't buy oil from Russia.
All the reason to drill domestically. That's all the reason for
United States don't buy oil.
Who cares?
United States don't buy oil from Russia.
It's
amazing. Look, again, if we're right now we're on the brink of World War III, or if we're not on the brink of it, we're walking up to the edge. And if that actually happens, what do you think is going to happen to oil being shipped across the ocean worldwide? It's going to be a target of everything. It will be restricted like it was during World War II. And guess what? You better have your own energy sources then. You better have them. You better be capable of energy independence if and when that occurs. There is no excuse, no matter what.
Did he say that Russian oil tankers is pulling up in the port of New Orleans? What the hell are you talking about? I ain't never seen a Russian oil tanker.
Hey, nobody's ready. Let me cut in on here. Let me cut in.
Yeah, why are you all things to pull up in New York? Where did you get that one from?
The U.S. is buying Russian diesel.
Well, I tell you what, they shouldn't be.
Let me cut in on here because we're in the archives right now. Man, this was a good show today. I'm going to have to cut it short right now.
Russian oil tankers are dropping off oil in the United States. This is the new one.
No one said that. That's again your inability to understand and comprehend. That's your own issue. I'm sorry.
Let me cut in here, y'all.
You come up with some of the craziest stuff, man. But you know, it's all right. You're a human being. That's okay. That's okay.
No, it's okay that you guys are slow. You're older.
It's okay.
You lose the fastball.
Here we go.
Man, that wasn't that show about you.
If we are slow, what does it say about you?
We are responding to every single argument
you make. You know, you're losing the fastball a little bit. It's okay. It happens to us.
No. Your arguments are really unfounded and very ineffective. But you can convince yourself that they are. Be my guest.
All right, y'all. I'm going to cut in here. And whatever, man, this was a great show today. This is the type of show that I like to have every week. And for those of you all who called in, you're welcome to come back in at any time. Once again, I'm going to have to let you all know, let's lighten up on the character assassinations and everything, okay? You know, that's not a way to have a discussion. But anyway, I really enjoyed the show today, and I'm going to have to cut it short right there. God willing, I should have another show again next week. Tell your friends, tell your grandma, tell your grandpappy, tell everybody, come on out. Anybody you know that would like to listen to the show, you know, they're welcome to come on. But anyway, this is Vincent E. Brown. I am signing off. And until the next time, I'll see you on the rebound. Y'all have a great week.